6 past the hour. This is Morning Sedition here on Air America Radio. My name is Dan Pashman. I'm here with Brendan McDonald.
Morning.
Chris Lopresto is here. We're in one more day. Today is our last day filling in for Mark Maron and Mark Riley. They will be back on Tuesday. Brendan and I are the senior producers of the show. Chris here is the technical director. Ordinarily, we are primarily the guys behind the scenes, pulling the levers behind the curtain. Today and for this entire past week, we've been stepping out front and center to try to fill Mark and Mark's void, but they will be back in full force next Tuesday. And it's going to be not the easiest show today, Brendan, because it's really been an evolution we've gone through this week with this hurricane. We started off on Monday just sort of reporting the news. We started off on Tuesday offering our sympathy and our support, and as the situation there has gotten worse, and as more and more facts have emerged about why the situation is as bad as it is, now we're just pissed off.
I'm pretty sick to my stomach today, Dan. It's been a tough night for me. I only slept about 3 hours, just on top of everything that we've been reading, and then the images we're seeing on the news, and the answers that we're not getting.
Mm-hmm.
It's a pretty sickening and disheartening time. And I, you know, feel a lot of different emotions. I feel angry. I feel sad. And I know that a lot of people out there listening probably have the same reaction. And I know that everyone's initial instinct is to just feel compassion and to just want to help and be there for other people. But you just face the facts that things aren't working and things aren't getting done. And it's angering and it's infuriating, and I can't come up with anything else other than I keep hearing, and I know it's unrelated, but I keep hearing Richard Clark's voice in my head.
Mm-hmm.
When he spoke in front of the 9/11 commission, and he said, "Your government failed you," to all the families that had lost people in 9/11.
Yeah.
And that's how I feel today and how I felt all week. The government failed you, and not just you, the people of the Gulf Coast, all of America. We elect civic leaders so that they can prepare and plan for these kinds of scenarios, and the tremendous burden that's been placed on this entire country as a result of this disastrous relief effort has been caused by complete and total failure on a governmental level.
It's true, Brendan, and we've been saying it for the last few days. We here on Morning Sedition and all around the entire schedule on Air America Radio have been one of the few media outlets, one of the first, I should say, media outlets to make this point, and we will continue to make this point, that much of the death and the destruction and the suffering that we have seen this week and that we are going to continue to see for days and weeks, and I'm afraid months to come, was preventable. It did not have to be this way. Okay, we understand that hurricanes are always going to be hurricanes, and we can't stop them entirely. And the sad truth is that when there are natural disasters, some people are always going to lose their homes, and some people, sadly, will always lose their lives. But we like to think that here in the United States of America, in the richest, most powerful, most luxurious country ever to exist in the history of humanity, you would think that we would have some of the basic protections in place to minimize that suffering, and it is painfully obvious from what we have seen in the last few days and what we will continue to see that was not and is not in place.
And Dan, I mean, in front of me right now, I have this laundry list of experts
right.
who say that this was warned, that this was spoken about for years. The former Bush administration official Eric Tolbert, who was FEMA's disaster response chief up until this February, is quoted in Knight Ridder as saying, "What you're seeing is revealing weaknesses in the state, local, and federal levels." Former FEMA's chief of staff Jane Bullock says the slow response to Katrina and poor federal leadership is a direct replay of 1992's mishandling of Hurricane Andrew. She pointed out that Homeland Security Chief Michael Chertoff and FEMA Director Michael Brown had no disaster experience before they were given their jobs, which begs the question. I mean, we're going back to 1992 here. If we didn't learn from past mistakes, will we ever do it right? Does the government even care if we do it right? I mean, they already cut federal funding specifically for one program. Listen to this program. A program that would have designed a plan to fix unresolved problems such as evacuating the sick and injured people of New Orleans from the Superdome. This was in the works.
Right.
A plan about the Superdome being an evacuation, being a refugee shelter, and then having to be evacuated. And also a plan to what to do to house the tens of thousands of stranded citizens. Federal funding cut from that program. That program was not carried out.
That's right. That program, that is exactly what we need right now, and that program was cut. And you know, Brendan, a lot of people are trying to say, a lot of, especially people in the Bush administration, are trying to say, and people who are carrying water for them, are trying to say, look, now is not the time to ask these questions. Now is not the time to point fingers. Right now we need to all pull together, get behind the president, and rally together as an American people. And look, that is going to happen, and it's happening on a local level with ordinary people who are making donations, who are helping out, and that is a great thing to see. But I refuse to wait to raise these concerns. I refuse to wait, because that is exactly what they want, because then people forget. This is why we need to talk about this right now, while those images are still on our TV screens, because right now you can see in full color, 3D on your screens, the direct results of decisions that were made, of conscious choices that were made. And I know it's difficult to be in different places around the country and to understand that decisions in Washington, D.C. affect real people, and that the billions and trillions of dollars that we hear talked about is real money, and that there isn't an endless supply of it. But those are real people, and they are decisions with real money that affect those real people. And right now, many hundreds and probably thousands of real people are dead because of those decisions. And I want to talk about it right now. I'm not going to wait for the report to come out 2 years from now when everyone else has moved on.
Well, and Dan, you kind of have to talk about it when 5 days go by and they still haven't had a proper response to stranded people there. People who are dying, people who are sitting in filth. There are dead people on the streets being eaten by rats. That you have to see that on the TV and ask these questions, say, why is this still happening? China was able to evacuate 790,000 people Wednesday and Thursday before a typhoon hit. There were 3 deaths, 52 injuries. Now, I'm not comparing that storm to Katrina. We have no way to meteorologically judge the two of them next to each other. But they had a plan in place, and they were able to do that with 790,000 people. Why weren't we able to get these people out, especially when there was a plan being worked on as to how to get people out of the Superdome and what to do with tens of thousands of refugees? And that plan funding was cut. And the former Bush administration official, Eric Tolbert, said it would have made the response faster. Quote, you might say it would have saved lives. And James Lee Witt, who was the former FEMA head, and he was a rare bipartisan favorite during the Clinton years, we all know what that was like, he had planned for a New Orleans nightmare scenario when he was the FEMA chief. And in the plans, the federal government figured it would pre-deploy ships nearby with pumps to remove water from the below sea level New Orleans, and then also have hospital ships right off the coast ready to go. None of that happened this time. And to quote James Lee Witt, these things need to be planned and prepared for. It just doesn't look like it was.
That's right, Brendan. And the underlying question under all of this is, we are now coming up on 4 years after September 11th, okay? And billions of dollars have been spent, supposedly, to prepare us for another terrorist attack. Now, when you have a terrorist attack, you don't get 3 days warning, like we got with this hurricane. Now, if our government is so horribly unprepared to deal with a hurricane like this, how much confidence do you really have in our Department of Homeland Security? How much confidence do you really have in those billions of dollars that the Bush administration has spent in recent years to buy ridiculous counterterrorism equipment for Wyoming? All right. How much confidence do you have that there really is a plan out there to keep us safe? We elected these guys because they were the ones who were going to keep us safe.
Well, we didn't elect them.
All right, right.
But America...
51% of America
apparently
did.
And, you know, the same people who are saying, don't politicize this, now's not the time for political questions, some of those same people are the ones who are blaming the victims of this tragedy. The victims who are still there in New Orleans. Some of these people are blaming them, specifically one bastard who we're going to get into in just a minute here. We're very upset this morning, and, you know, I will... apologize at the beginning of the show right now for any kind of rough tone that you might hear this morning, but it's unavoidable.
Yeah.
And I really feel that most people have the same feeling that it is unavoidable. They might not have the same tone as we do right now, but it's unavoidable to have these feelings and the feeling, the range of emotions that everyone is going through. And when we come back, we're going to talk about why this range of emotions is especially important for the victims of this storm, for us to have this voice for them, because right now they're being blamed. It's 17 past the hour. This is Brendan and Dan here on Morning Sedition.
Morning Sedition.
This is to wake up.
Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
I've heard about those people.
On Air America Radio.
Thanks.
Good morning. It's Morning Sedition here on Air America Radio, 21 minutes past the hour. I'm Dan Patchen. I'm here with Brendan McDonald.
Morning.
We're filling in for Mark and Mark. They'll be back on Tuesday, and we are just angry today. We've gone from sympathy to and empathy and grief, and now we are really finding out the truth about what's gone on in the Gulf Coast in terms of lack of preparedness, in terms of diverted funds. And now, Brendan, there's a new level of offensiveness coming out of certain figures in the right wing.
Right. When the FEMA director, Michael Brown, is saying that the agency is trying to, quote, help those who are stranded, who chose not to evacuate, who chose not to leave the city, end quote. How can you not be furious at that?
How dare you?
There are one-third of the population of New Orleans lives below the poverty line. How are some of these people choosing anything? They don't even get to choose whether they're eating some nights.
That's right. I mean, it is so fundamentally offensive to say that they chose to stay. I understand that these conservatives have a hard time understanding what it's like to not have a car, not be able to afford food, let alone a hotel, and not have anywhere to go. I mean, Condi Rice yesterday was shopping for shoes in New York City. She spent thousands of dollars yesterday. At the same moment that people were dying in the United States of America, our Secretary of State went shopping.
And other cabinet members are trying to do work as well.
Right.
So that situation, it just tells me that they either, there's only two options. They're just too stupid or they don't care.
Right.
And neither of those options are good.
And it's those people who would suggest, people who are shopping for shoes at this moment, would suggest that the poor people, the victims stranded now on the Gulf Coast, chose to stay there.
Right, and we're also seeing plenty of onus from on that side of the people who are trying to blame the victims. We're also seeing this onus on the looters and people who are enacting violence in New Orleans right now. And to be honest with you, the reports that we are getting, we are not seeing this level of violence that is being talked about. And I can't help but be suspicious of that as an excuse to cut and run. That this is cut and run time, Dan. That this administration talks about how they don't want to cut and run in Iraq. Well, it sure looks like they're cutting and running here, because where is the relief? I saw one expert put it pretty well. If Fox and CNN can get in there, why can't the relief get in there? And I question the same things. There may be perfectly reasonable answers to that, but I question it. And you know what the catch is? The catch is the cost.
Right.
Because the price of raising a levee, for instance, something that could have prevented the huge amounts of damage, that climbs enormously with each additional foot. And Congress hasn't given the Army Corps of Engineers the money they need to make the upgrades that were needed, ever. They never gave them the money.
And New Orleans is sinking every year, which is why the levies need to be raised.
So see, these lawmakers are like the auto companies that we were talking about the other day. They balance the cost of death against the cost of fixing a problem. If it costs less to pay out the families of dead people, you don't recall the vehicle. Which brings us to House Speaker Denny Hastert. Denny Bastert says it doesn't make sense to rebuild New Orleans. Now, let's make something clear here. When Katrina approached, I remembered thinking, why is a major metropolitan city built below sea level? This seems ridiculous to me. But it does exist there, and the existence of the city makes that question irrelevant. The city was established, for better or worse, and it has become part of America's shared culture. And as Mayor Ray Nagin said, it's a city that gave us jazz and music and multiculturalism, and we remain indebted to all cities and towns of America for such contributions. And that's why we just sit here and shake our heads when we see that the proper precautions weren't taken to protect the city of New Orleans. But Denny Bastard wants us, he wants to have it both ways, Dan. He and other lawmakers thought the death, that rebuilding, that the other losses would cost less than fixing the problem. So it went underfunded. And now they're seeing that they were wrong, that fixing it would have been cheaper than the catastrophic loss we're now seeing. So Denny Bastard says, let's not rebuild, let's cut and run. Well, you're not allowed to cut and run, you bastard. Your reckless policies worsened this disastrous relief effort. You owe it to these people to rebuild.
You're right, Brendan. We owe the people of New Orleans something, and conservative leaders of America owe all of us something, and that's an explanation. I highly doubt we're going to get it. But they do owe it to us, and it's important to once again stress that so much of this death and destruction was preventable. Something could have been done. There were clear, there were plans that needed to be laid out. There were ideas, and the money was cut, and the money was put elsewhere, and that was a conscious choice, a decision that was made by the people currently running our country.
And I don't want us to rag on every worker of the federal government or the government of Louisiana or of the city of New Orleans. Obviously, hundreds of thousands of people are doing whatever they can
right.
to make this right. There are people, though, who enact these policies who have done wrong and who have failed you, America, failed the whole country.
It's true. It's true, Brendan. Now, if you're like Brendan and I, you're very angry today. You're very upset. But, you know, when people get upset and get angry, sometimes it helps to take a deep breath and put things aside for just a moment or two and get a little bit of a smile on your face. Unfortunately, Brendan and I, see, we're having a little trouble bringing up that kind of attitude today. But fortunately, we have some clips of Mark Maron and Mark Riley from an earlier time that are pretty entertaining and pretty funny. We're going to have a clip of them with Lawton Smalls from
right.
Planet Bush to put a smile on your face today.
Hopefully put a smile on my face, too, because I need it right now.
That's right. We also have a brand new radio theater coming up in just a few moments. It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. I'm Dan. That's Brendan. It's 27 minutes
that
past.
That put a smile on my face.
27 past the hour.
Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition old-time radio players present this installment of Morning Sedition Radio Theater.
This week, with Mark Maron and Mark Riley gone, the remaining producers, writers, and characters from Morning Sedition gather for an important summit.
So, what do you guys feel like doing?
Yeah, I don't know.
Hey, let's dig through Maron's stuff.
Yeah!
Is that membership card? Oprah's Book of the Month Club? Oh, man.
Hey, look, Cardinal Milfington found a CD.
It's labeled Mark's Private Mix. Undoubtedly a perverted compilation for long car trips. To hell.
Put it in the CD player.
Parents suck.
I can't believe you work with this guy.
Hey, wait. What did Lawton Smalls find?
Hey, right here, I got a letter here from Fox TV. Dear Mr. Maron, thank you for submitting an audition tape for the host position on American Idol. Unfortunately, we have to pass.
Well, that's not surprising.
Wow, Mark has a secret life.
A secret wimpy life.
Let's go through Riley's stuff.
Yeah!
Wow, here's a picture of Riley and Diana Ross. It's signed, Baby Love, Last Night Was So Intense, I Just Wanted to Scream Stop in the Name of Love. You inspire me in and out of bed.
That FedEx envelope smells like pot.
The note says, to my OG, when are we going to finish your CD? Signed, Snoop.
Riley is off the hook. Who knew?
I'll bet you're all wondering what I found.
Not really.
Hey, let's go through Wayne Gilman's stuff.
Yeah!
Hey, I found a gun.
I found a list with all our names on it.
Guys, Wayne isn't on vacation.
This is Wayne Gilman. Ready for another taste of Wayne?
No, no more. Not again. Radio theater announcer guy, please help us.
This has been another edition of Morning's Edition Radio Theater. Oh, hello, Wayne.
Morning's Edition, Air America Radio. It's 37 minutes past the hour. I'm Dan Pashman. I'm here with Brendan McDonald.
Good morning.
Chris Lopresto is here. Mark and Mark will be back next week, and we do want to let you know our biggest and best ever live broadcast will be next Friday, September 9th, at the New School's Tishman Auditorium. We're going to have former Senator Bob Kerry, Daily Show's Stephen Colbert, and that's the same room that once housed Inside the Actor's Studio, and it was also the site of one of the rounds of 9/11 commission hearings. So a lot of cool stuff is happening there. It's a beautiful theater, and we're going to be in there next Friday at the Tishman Auditorium on 12th Street, just east of 6th Avenue, next Friday from 6 to 9. And, Brendan, one of the things you can do at these live broadcasts is meet Lawton Smalls from Planet Bush.
And touch Mark Riley.
That's true. Above the belt. Keep it above the belt.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We like to stay north of the equator at these broadcasts. But we are here this morning. This is day five of our coverage of the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina. And it's kind of been an emotional morning already.
Yeah.
And we need to have a few different emotions in the show today. We just played Morning's Edition Radio Theater, always good for a laugh, and we thought that maybe there are a lot of people out there that would like to smile, and there are very, very few people out there who make us smile more than the aforementioned Lawton Smalls. As Dan said, he appears at plenty of our live broadcasts, and he'll be there at the New School. And this clip that we're going to play right now with Mark and Mark talking to our Planet Bush Bureau Chief, Lawton Smalls, was at the Tea Lounge in Park Slope, Brooklyn. Great neighborhood and a great place.
Yeah.
And we've actually been there twice. We might return there at some point.
They were hoping to go back this fall.
And but when Lawton came by, he was about to get in touch with something within himself that I think Park Slope and the Tea Lounge in general helped bring out. So this is Lawton Smalls for you this morning here with Mark and Mark.
Since our president is openly operating in a different reality, we think it's important that that Americans know what's happening in this alternate universe. Luckily, we have a staffer who lives in that world. So now here again is Planet Bush Bureau Chief Lawton Smalls. Good morning, Lawton.
Yeah.
Is this your first time in Brooklyn?
Good morning, Mark. Yes, obviously it's my first time in Brooklyn.
Uh-huh.
You might as well ask if this is my first time in purgatory, my first time into the frying pan.
All right, okay.
Sizzling.
I get it. So how'd you get here, man?
I got here by the road to perdition.
Mm.
The F train.
No.
I have never been so terrified in my life. You people ride that thing every day? You know, that's how Satan travels.
Oh.
Underground and in the dark. In the dark.
All right. Hey, well, what happened, Martin? I mean, what you worked up about?
Well, all right. You can imagine I was a little bit nervous on the platform down
sure.
there. I was hot, smelly, full of strange people all around me. So when the train came, I couldn't decide whether to get on or not. So I just stood there holding the closing doors for like 5 or 6 minutes. People said such hateful things.
Wow.
I've never heard such anger.
Really? Imagine that. I wouldn't think that would have happened.
I saw plenty of rats down here, by the way. Enormous.
Oh.
Thought they were going to eat me. Is that okay?
Come on, folks.
Living
dude,
with rats?
Dude,
you know, if that weren't bad enough, somebody told me this is Gay Pride Week.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the saddest three words in the English language.
Oh, stop it.
On Planet Bush, we have Gay Shame Year.
Oh, stay there. Come on.
Every year.
That's not right. Why do you say things like that, Lawton?
Every year. Okay. A bunch of them got on the train and tried to convert me.
No, they didn't.
While I was on the train.
It's not a religion.
Minding my business.
Come on. And how do you know they were gay, Lawton?
Mark, I have the gaydar.
Uh-huh.
Okay? I know the hens from the roosters. All right? There's these skinny little boys laughing and giggling like little girls. They smelled like fancy cologne. Gay Agenda by Calvin Klein.
Oh, stop it.
Everywhere. Smell gay.
They did not. You're making all this up, Lawton.
Oh, I wish I was. Every minute I spend in this liberal, multicultural, permissive, elitist, decadent hellhole is like some kind of bad dream I hope to wake up from. I pray that I'll wake up and look up at the ceiling at my poster of President George W. Two Terms Mandate Bush staring back at me, and everything will be back to normal. Bad dream, Dorothy. You're back in Kansas. You know what I mean? Well, I can't leave this place fast enough.
You know what, Lawton?
It was all a dream.
You know what, Lawton? Dream. It's too bad, buddy, because you're going to miss the parade.
What do you mean parade? What are you talking about?
The Gay Pride Parade, Lawton. It's Sunday, and it's the biggest, wildest parade ever.
Parade?
Yeah.
You know, I'd like to see all of them parade right into the sewer.
No,
that's what I'd like
Lawton,
to see.
Lawton, listen to me, man. It's fantastic. There are floats and bands.
No.
Yes, it's a great time. Everybody dances and they're singing. And
stop
it. No, it's going to be great fun and you're going to miss it.
Stop it.
Yes.
Stop it.
Yes.
Stop it.
Yes.
It's a parade?
Yes.
Sunday. Yeah. It's a parade.
Uh-huh.
I want to do a parade. I wanted to be in that parade since I was 6 years old. My ticket was Saturday and now I can't go. I love Gloria Gaynor. I love Donna Summer. I made a showgirl costume with yellow ostrich feathers. People say I look just like Sandra Bullock in Miss Congeniality, too. I look just like... I never get to do anything fun because I'm stuck on stupid Planet Bush. It's so stupid. It's so stupid. I'm coming out. I want the world to know. Got to
Wow.
I'm coming.
Wow.
Ouch!
I didn't know you had to miss the parade that bad. I hate to stop you from singing this time, but we're going to be all right now. This is a big day.
Yeah.
Oh, you all right? Take it easy, man. You all right?
Rats, Mark. I saw a rat the size of a Rottweiler.
Oh,
it had a baby in its teeth. It was coming for me next.
We can't go back there.
Coming
now,
for
Lawton.
Me next. Rats
all right,
everywhere.
All right. Goodbye, Lawton. We know who you are.
All right. God loves you. Deal with it.
We're back on Morning Sedition, Air America Radio. That was Lawton Smalls from Planet Bush appearing live at the Tea Lounge in Brooklyn a few months ago. And if you come to our live broadcast next Friday at the New School's Tishman Auditorium, you too can see Lawton Smalls in person.
And I'm glad we played that, Dan, because it did need a little pick-me-up today. It's not a huge consolation, but it is something that we do here on Morning Sedition. We try to balance the facts and the funny, and that was pretty funny, and I appreciate that we had it in our vault, and that's what Mark and Mark do. They'll be back on Tuesday to do it some more. And we are also going to play some extraordinary sound coming up of New Orleans Mayor Ray Nagin. He was appearing on WWL, which is the radio down in New Orleans.
Right, sister station of our affiliate, WSMB.
Absolutely, and we are going to play that for you because you will never hear a politician speak the way he did, as honestly and as angrily and as forthright. We're pretty amazed by it sitting here just listening to it.
It really was breathtaking. We're going to replay that in its entirety very shortly. We're going to continue to update you on the situation there. We're going to continue to be really an outlet, Brendan, for I think a lot of the anger and frustration that is being felt around the country for a disaster that was preventable to a large extent. Not entirely,
yeah,
but to a large extent. And that's what's so upsetting and so frustrating is that when you see the death and destruction on your television screen and you know that there were decisions made by people in Washington, by people around the country, and we're not blasting the people in the low level who are trying to do their jobs. We know there's a lot of people out there trying to do good work.
Thousands.
But there were decisions that were made in Washington and around the country, decisions in terms of policy and decisions in terms of budget and funding that made this much, much worse than it had to be. And we are going to call those people out and we are going to hold them accountable. And no one else is going to do it except Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition, delivering you from evil. In 3 hours or less, Air America Radio.
It's Morning Sedition, 50 minutes past the hour, Air America Radio. I'm Dan Pashman. I'm here with Brendan McDonald.
Good morning.
Mark Maron and Mark Riley will return on Tuesday, and we are monitoring the situation with the hurricane. Brendan and I, quite frankly, are really, really upset today, as many of you are out there, and we started off feeling sadness and sympathy on Monday, and that has slowly changed and evolved into outright anger as more evidence has come forward. And in just a few minutes, we're going to replay an interview of New Orleans Mayor Ray Nagin, an absolutely unbelievable piece of audio that we have for you. It's rare. It's really only in times of crisis do you see politicians be this honest. And he gave an interview to WWL Radio in New Orleans, our sister station to our affiliate down there, WSMB. And we're going to replay a large chunk, if not that entire interview, in just a few moments. You're going to want to stay tuned for that, Brendan. But one of the most offensive and most atrocious things that we've seen in the last 24 to 48 hours is that conservatives actually have the nerve to blame the victims. Now, in the past month, we've seen the real heart of conservatives. When they're shown to be wrong, they never argue the merit. All right? They never try to defend themselves by saying that their decisions were right. Instead, they attack the person, no matter who the person is. Do you recall many conservatives defending the Iraq War when Cindy Sheehan was down in Crawford, Texas?
No.
Right. All right, they attacked her.
Right, we've never heard a proper defense of the Iraq War.
Right, we still have not found out what that noble cause that Cindy Sheehan was asking for is. They attacked her, a mother who lost her son in the war. They had the nerve to attack her. All right, and now with overwhelming evidence that shows that the Bush administration made the conscious choice to take money away from disaster preparedness to fight in Iraq, do they argue that point? Do they defend their decisions? Do they try to explain why it was the right thing to do? No, of course not. Instead, they attack the victims. They tell us that these poor people dying in the streets are to blame for their own destitution. It's their fault because they didn't leave, even though they had no way to leave and nowhere to go. All right, a third of the people in that city live in poverty. They have no way to leave and nowhere to go. Only a conservative would create the conditions that lead to a disaster like this and then blame the victims for their destitution.
Well, we see a paper here in Connecticut, the Waterbury, Connecticut Republican American newspaper. How's that for a paper name?
Yeah, right.
Wrote an editorial entitled, "Is New Orleans Worth Reclaiming?" Now, this was an issue that we talked about a little earlier in relation to House Speaker Denny Bastard, who said that, no, we should not reclaim New Orleans. And I, you know, said that when Katrina first approached, I had the feeling is, you know, why is New Orleans under, you know, under sea level and slowly sinking? Why is it a major metropolitan city?
Right.
And then I realized that that is an irrelevant question. Because it is a city. It is there. It contributes to the shared culture of America. And we need to preserve it. So with that aside, that issue aside, that argument was not even brought up in this editorial, which was titled, "Is New Orleans Worth Claiming?" This was an outright attack on the victims mm-hmm. of this tragedy. Here's the quote. "Americans' hearts go out to the people in Katrina's path, but if the people of New Orleans and other low-lying areas insist on living in harm's way, they ought to accept responsibility for what happens to them and their property." Again, very typical of conservatives.
Right.
Create insurmountable conditions.
Brent, read that quote again. I want to make sure people hear the attitude, and I want you conservatives out there who are listening, ask yourself, is this the way a moral person thinks?
"If the people of New Orleans and other low-lying areas insist on living in harm's way, they ought to accept responsibility for what happens to them and their property." So here we go. Create insurmountable conditions. Unavoidable. Insurmountable. Insurmountable conditions for regular people, and then blame the people for not overcoming those conditions. Crippling poverty and underfunded disaster protection, be damned. You ought to just accept responsibility for those problems.
That's right. And it is so reminiscent, Brendan, of another problem we've talked about recently, which is, you know, conservatives are so quick to blame the homeless for being homeless.
It's just like conservatives to do this, that when a homeless person, you know, who one quarter of homeless men in America are military veterans.
Right.
That is a statistic that blew my mind when I first heard it. 25% of all homeless men on the street are military veterans. They are in wars that conservatives were more than willing to send them to. And then who's the first person to see a homeless person on the street and say, hey, bum, get a job? A conservative.
Right. So they create the condition, and then they blame their own. They blame the victims of their own policies. And meanwhile, I just can't say it enough. Meanwhile, while there are bodies being eaten by rats in the streets of an American city in the year 2005, Condi Rice went to see Spamalot, the Broadway musical, the Monty Python Broadway musical. And then yesterday, she went to Ferragamo, which is one of the fanciest, highest-end clothing shoe stores in New York City, and spent thousands of dollars on shoes. She went shoe shopping, Brendan. There are bodies in the streets of an American city, and our Secretary of State is shopping.
Well, apparently, according to an eyewitness, and we don't know if this is exactly true or if this is a story that is filtered down. But
we know she was there.
We know she was there, but apparently someone in the store said to her, how dare you? People are dying right now.
Right.
And, you know, good for that person. You can't imagine how many times I envision being in a situation like that with these people.
Yeah.
And I always think, what would I do? It's like a time where I wound up being in an elevator with OJ. And my mind just, like, it went on the fritz. Because right. I went, what do I do? Do I say something? Do I tell him what a piece of trash I think he is?
Right.
I can't imagine what I would do in a situation where if I was in a store and Condi Rice came in to go pleasure shopping.
Right.
Well, every other member of the cabinet is trying to do their job to get this country running again.
And the important part of that story, at the end of the story, is that the woman came up and said this to her, as we understand it, said, how dare you? And she had the woman removed from the store.
Yeah, that's not surprising.
Right, right. In just a minute, you really want to stay tuned. We have some absolutely riveting audio to play for you. New Orleans Mayor Ray Nagin gave an interview just a few moments ago to New Orleans radio station WWL, our sister station down there. We're going to replay that interview for you, and it is very rare that you ever hear a politician talk the way Ray Nagin talked in this interview.
He says at the end of the interview, people aren't going to want to talk to me again after this, and the people he means are other elected officials.
Right.
Because of who he calls out for being responsible for the death and destruction that's going on right now. You know, that's the distinction we need to make. Not the death and destruction on Monday morning.
Right.
That happened as a result of the storm hitting the Gulf Coast. The death and destruction that's been going on for the last 4 days.
Right.
4 days, people abandoned, not on an island, in an American mainland city.
That's right, and that's death and destruction that could have been prevented. Stay tuned, we have more. It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Six past the hour. This is Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. I'm Dan Pashman. I'm here with Brendan McDonald.
Good morning.
We're filling in for Mark Maron and Mark Riley, who will return on Tuesday. And we want to go directly right now to some extremely riveting and emotional audio that we have for you. New Orleans Mayor Ray Nagin did an interview last evening with Garland Robinette from WWL out of New Orleans. That's our sister station down there. And we're going to play this interview in its entirety because it is just that emotional and just that riveting. And it's rare that you hear a politician speak this candidly, so we're going to go to that audio now. This is New Orleans Mayor Ray Nagin yesterday evening.
They told him we had an incredible crisis here, and that his flying over in Air Force One does not do it justice. And that I have been all around this city, and I am very frustrated because we are not able to marshal resources, and we're outmanned in just about every respect. You know the reason why the looters got out of control? Because we had most of our resources saving people, thousands of people that were stuck in attics, man, old ladies. When you pull off the doggone ventilator vent and you look down there and they're standing in there in water up to their freaking neck. And they don't have a clue what's going on down there. They flew down here one time, 2 days after the doggone event was over, with TV cameras, AP reporters, all kind of goddamn, excuse my French, everybody in America. But I am pissed.
Did you say to the President of the United States, I need the military in here?
I said, I need everything. Now, I will tell you this, and I give the president some credit on this. He sent one John Wayne dude down here that can get some stuff done. And his name is General Honore. And he came off the doggone chopper, and he started cussing, and people started moving. And he's getting some stuff done. They ought to give that guy, they don't want to give it to me, give him full authority to get the job done. And we can save some people.
What do you need right now to get control of this situation?
I need reinforcements. I need troops, man. I need 500 buses, man. We're talking about, you know, one of the briefings we had, they were talking about getting, you know, public school bus drivers to come down here and bus people out here. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. This is a national disaster. Get every doggone Greyhound bus line in the country and get their asses moving to New Orleans. That's they thinking small, man, and this is a major, major, major deal. And I can't emphasize it enough, man. This is crazy. I've got 15 to 20,000 people over at the convention center. It's bursting at the seams. The poor people in Plaquemines Parish, they're air vacuuming people over here in New Orleans. We don't have anything, and we're sharing with our brothers in Plaquemines Parish. It's awful down here, man.
Do you believe that the president is seeing this, holding news conference on it, but can't do anything until Kathleen Blanco requests him to do it? And do you know whether or not she has made that request?
I have no idea what they're doing, but I will tell you this. You know, God is looking down on all this, and if they are not doing everything in their power to save people, they are going to pay the price. Because every day that we delay, people are dying. And they're dying by the hundreds, I'm willing to bet you. We're getting reports and calls that is breaking my heart from people saying, I've been in my attic. I can't take it anymore. The water is up to my neck. I don't think I can hold out. And that's happening as we speak. And you know what really upsets me, Garland? We told everybody the importance of the 17th Street Canal issue. We said, please, please take care of this. We don't care what you do. Figure it out.
Who'd you say that to?
Everybody. Governor. You know, Homeland Security, FEMA, you name it, we said it. And, you know, they allowed that pumping station next to it, Pumping Station 6, to go underwater. Our sewage and water board people, Marcia St. Martin, stayed there and endangered their lives. And what happened when that pumping station went down, the water started flowing again in the city. And it started getting to levels that probably killed more people. In addition to that, so we had water flowing through the pipes in the city. That's a power station over there. So there's no water flowing anywhere on the east bank of Orleans Parish. So a critical water supply was destroyed because of lack of action.
Why couldn't they drop the 3,000-pound sandbags or the containers that they were talking about earlier? Was it an engineering feat that just couldn't be done?
They said it was some pulleys that they had to manufacture, but, you know, in a state of emergency, man, you are creative. You figure out ways to get stuff done. Then they told me that they went overnight and they built 17 concrete structures, and they had the pulleys on them, and they were going to drop them. I flew over that thing yesterday, and it's in the same shape that it was after the storm hit. There is nothing happening. And they're feeding the public a line of bull, and it's spinning, and people are dying down here.
If
this is Morning's Edition, and we're continuing to listen to New Orleans Mayor Ray Nagin in an interview with WWL Radio.
That the federal government can't do anything without local or state request. Would you request martial law?
I've already called for martial law in the city of New Orleans. We did that a few days ago.
Did the governor do that too?
I don't know. I don't think so. But we called for martial law when we realized that the looting was getting out of control, and we redirected all of our police officers back to patrolling the streets. They were dead tired from saving people, but they worked all night because we thought this thing was going to blow wide open last night. And so we redirected all of our resources, and we held it under check. I'm not sure if we can do that another night. with the current resources. And I am telling you right now, they're showing all these reports of people looting and doing all that weird stuff, and they are doing that. But people are desperate, and they're trying to find food and water, the majority of them. Now, you got some knuckleheads out there, and they are taking advantage of this lawless situation where, you know, we can't really control it, and they are doing some awful, awful things. But that's a small majority of the people. Most people are looking to try and survive. And you've got one of the things people have, nobody's talked about this. Drugs flowed in and out of New Orleans and the surrounding metropolitan area so freely it was scary to me. And that's why we were having an escalation in murders. People don't want to talk about this, but I'm going to talk about it. You had drug addicts that are now walking around this city looking for a fix. And that's the reason why they were breaking in hospitals and drug stores. They're looking for something to take the edge off of their Jones, if you will. And right now, they don't have anything to take the edge off. And they probably found guns. So what you're seeing is drug-starving, crazy addicts, drug addicts, that are wreaking havoc. And we don't have the manpower to adequately deal with. We can only target certain sections of the city and form a perimeter around them and hope to God that we're not overrun.
Well, you and I must be in the minority because there, apparently there's a section of our citizenry out there that thinks because of a law that says the federal government can't come in unless requested by the proper people. That everything that's going on to this point has been done as good as it can possibly be.
Really?
I know you don't feel that way.
Well, did the tsunami victims request? You go through a formal process to request? You know, did the Iraqi people request that we go in there? Did they ask us to go in there? What is more important? This is, you know, and I'll tell you, man, I'm probably going to get in a whole bunch of trouble. I'm probably going to get in so much trouble it ain't even funny. They probably won't even want to deal with me after this interview is over.
Well, you and I'll be in the funny place together.
But we authorized $8 billion to go to Iraq. Lickety-quick. After 9/11. We gave the president unprecedented powers, lickety-quick, to take care of New York and other places. Now, you mean to tell me that a place where most of your oil is coming through, a place that is so unique, when you mention New Orleans anywhere around the world, everybody's eyes light up. You mean to tell me that a place where you probably have thousands of people that have died, and thousands more that are dying every day, that we can't figure out a way to authorize the resources that we need? Come on, man. You know, I'm not one of those drug addicts. I am thinking very clearly. And I don't know whose problem it is. I don't know whether it's the governor's problem. I don't know whether it's the president's problem. But somebody needs to get their ass on a plane and sit down, the two of them, and figure this out right now.
What can we do here?
Keep talking about it.
Okay. We'll do that. What else can we do?
Organize people to write letters, make calls to their congressmen, to the president, to the governor. Flood their doggone offices with requests to do something. This is ridiculous. I don't want to see anybody do any more goddamn press conferences. Put a moratorium on press conferences. Don't do another press conference until the resources are in this city. And then come down to this city and stand with us when there are military trucks and troops that we can't even count. Don't tell me 40,000 people are coming here. They're not here. It's too doggone late. Now get off your asses and let's do something. And let's fix the biggest goddamn crisis in the history of this country.
I'll say it right now. You're the only politician that's called and called for arms like this. And if whatever it takes, the governor, president, whatever law president it takes, whatever it takes, I bet that the people listening to you are on your side.
Well, I hope so, Garland. I am just, I'm at the point now where it don't matter. People are dying. They don't have homes. They don't have jobs. The city of New Orleans will never be the same. And it's time.
We were both pretty speechless here.
Yeah, I don't know what to say.
I gotta go.
Okay.
Keep in touch. Keep in touch.
That was New Orleans Mayor Ray Nagin in an interview with WWL Radio in New Orleans, and the interviewer was Garland Robinette. There at the end, you heard both of them breaking down into tears. You heard some audio spilling over. That was the background audio in the studio that you heard in WWL Studios. And a very, very amazingly strong and profound interview the New Orleans Mayor Ray Nagin gave. And we will be back here on Morning Sedition on Air America Radio to react to that in just a minute. It's 19 minutes past the hour. This is Air America.
Morning Sedition on the air and online. MorningSedition.com. Air America Radio.
Twenty-five past the hour, Morning Sedition, Air America Radio. I'm Dan Pashman. I'm here with Brendan McDonald. Chris Lopresto is here, and we are filling in for Mark Maron and Mark Riley. They'll be back on Tuesday. And that audio that we just played before the break, that was New Orleans Mayor Ray Nagin, and really an unbelievable, an honest, and a really heart-wrenching interview that he gave yesterday evening, to WWL Radio in New Orleans, one of our sister stations down there. And we are going to replay a good chunk of that interview again later in the show. So if you tuned in the middle and you want to hear more of it, stick around because we are going to replay that. But, Brendan, it's rare that you hear a politician that honest and that raw. And just the suffering that's going on there and is still going on there and is going to continue to go on there is really mind-boggling.
That's correct. And the end of that interview, you heard Ray Nagin and the interviewer Garland Robinette break down in tears. They were silent for about 10 seconds until we finally heard them sniffling and heard that they were in tears. I kind of have to think about this from their perspective as if they on Monday thought that this city had hoped to live.
Right.
And now slowly over the past 4 days, it's being killed.
Yeah.
It's being killed a slow and painful death.
And it was the sentence that really, I think, set them off and made them start crying was when Mayor Nagin said, the city of New Orleans is never going to be the same again.
Right.
You know, and you can tell.
This is where they live and this is.
Right. This is their home. I would guess that they grew up there. I mean, look at the name Garland Robinette. That's a New Orleans name right there.
Right.
You know, that's the interviewer's name. And Mayor Nagin, obviously the mayor of that city. And it's true. New Orleans is never, ever going to be the same again. And one of the points from that interview that really just is sticking with me is the fact that people are still dying, and people are going to die today.
Right.
Here on the East Coast right now, it's about 7:30 in the morning. Okay, in the next hours and days ahead, there's going to be more loss of life. It is not over yet. We are not past the worst. And the point that we keep driving home here on Air America is that it did not have to be this way.
Well, a quote that Mayor Nagin said that stood out to me is that he said, we gave this president unprecedented powers after 9/11.
Right.
And then he said, you mean to tell me that a place where thousands have died and thousands more are dying, that we can't get some kind of authorization to get people down here? I mean, Mayor Nagin sounded so in the dark about so much of what's going on, and definitely not by his own choosing. He was begging for information on this interview.
I mean, we see those shots on our screens. You know, it seems like every cable channel has a TV camera set up outside the New Orleans Convention Center, where, as Mayor Nagin said, there are people, it's bursting at the seams. There are people outside with nowhere to go. And I don't see anyone there helping those people. I don't see the National Guard. Of course, many of them are in Iraq, so they can't be there. I don't see the government there. You know, and the government, as you said, Brendan, at the top of the show, and we'll say it again, you know, and you were wise to point to Richard Clark, who said at the 9/11 Commission hearings to the families of the victims of 9/11, he said, your government failed you. Well, here again this week, our government has failed us, and the government specifically failed the people of the Gulf Coast and the people of New Orleans. And for those conservatives who would say that the federal government doesn't need to exist, they want to suffocate it out of existence. This is why we have the government, right. Is to protect the people when things like this happen. In just a minute, my friend Alap Shah, who has just returned from Sri Lanka, where he's helping to rebuild homes in the wake of the tsunami there, is going to tell us about that effort and also give us some of his personal experience, which I think will help to relate to what's going on in the Gulf Coast. This is Morning Sedition's Air America Radio, 27 past the hour.
Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition is on the air. It's Air America Radio. I'm Dan Pashman. I'm here with Brendan McDonald.
Good morning.
Chris Lopresto is here. Mark and Mark will be back on Tuesday. And we're still kind of all in awe of and reacting to that amazing audio from New Orleans Mayor Ray Nagin, some of the most emotional and powerful audio that you're going to hear from a politician, Brendan.
When the interviewer, Garland Robinette, asked Mayor Nagin, what can we do here? The quote that I will remember, and I hope everybody listening remembers, and I hope everybody that was listening to it will take it into action, was Mayor Ray Nagin said, keep talking about it. Keep talking about what's going on and the devastation that continues in New Orleans right now. Don't just think of this as something that has passed and that relief efforts are underway and things will be taken care of. Keep talking about the fact that this hasn't been completed yet and is getting worse by the day.
That's right. And if you weren't able to hear that interview or didn't hear all of it, that audio of New Orleans Mayor Ray Nagin from our sister station WWL in New Orleans, we are going to replay that interview in its entirety in a little bit. So you're definitely going to want to stay tuned for that. And right now we're going to bring my friend here in Alap Shah is here with us, and he recently returned from Sri Lanka, and this is a separate but related story to what we're talking about in the news today, and we are going to tie it in. And there were a lot of comparisons to the tsunami in the last couple of days with what we've seen in the Gulf Coast. And Alap left for Sri Lanka a few months ago, and he spent a few months there helping to rebuild homes in the wake of the tsunami, working with a group called Sri Lanka Care Foundation. You can look into them at SriLankaCare.org. And Alap, first tell us what inspired you to go over there and go to Sri Lanka and help out like you did.
Essentially, you know, the reason I went over there was just watching the devastation unfolding on television, reading about it and whatnot. It just seemed that I was completely compelled to go. I had the opportunity, I had the you know, financial means, and I had a pretty understanding job that would actually just let me go and go out there for as long as I wanted to go.
Now, one thing, Alap, that I'm noticing with this effort in New Orleans right now is that when you look at a place that's completely flooded out and the problems that are caused by that, then disease, you know, dysentery, typhoid, mm-hmm. and then any other, you know, problems that creates with irrigation and getting fresh water in there, it just seems so insurmountable. And New Orleans is a contained area as compared to South Asia, where this affected so many areas. How, as a relief worker, mm-hmm. did you keep that in perspective while you were there to say, you know, well, what I'm doing has got to help? When you look around and there's so much flooding and so much problems, what do you do as a relief worker to make those things work in your mind?
I think the only thing that you can do is just focus on the task, at hand, and just, you know, just continue to work and, you know, move things that need to be moved and deal with the issues as they come along. Like, I really had no regard for, you know, thinking about disease and dysentery. I took all my shots and things like that before I left. But really, when I actually was on the ground and whatnot, my sole focus and all my energy went to just helping these people get back on track in their lives.
What were the things that gave you hope while you were there?
The people themselves, like, they were – it was so surprising to see. I was expecting to see so many people essentially having their, you know, their head in their hands and, you know, wailing. But these people, you know, saw this as something that another thing that they had to deal with in their poverty-stricken lives. And they just started to move on, and that was most inspiring. Like, every day I would get greeted by, like, you know, these wonderful smiles and hellos, and that kept me going.
You were telling me a while back, I'd like for you to share with people a specific experience that you had with one man who was especially appreciative of the work you were doing there.
Yeah, this was something of a touching experience, and something I think I'll never forget. And at least I hope I never forget. What happened was that we were working on a particular house, and a man had come by, and one of the workers identified this individual as somebody who's been looking for his wife ever since the tsunami. So this is sometime in, I guess, late May, early June. And this man came to this house that we were working on and said that, you know, he heard that there was an unclaimed body in the back. And we'd been working on that house for a few weeks now, and we'd all, you know, worked around that body and whatnot. And he went to go look at the body, and he apparently identified it as his wife. And the only way
it was his wife.
It was his wife, and the only way he could identify her was because just skeletal remains. Was by her clothing, and let me give you some just context there, is that, you know, a lot of people in this area probably have like one or two pairs of clothing, so it was very an identifiable thing for him to have. And what I witnessed was him coming to me, his wife's skull in his hands with her dress, and just saying, "My wife," and he made like a big sweeping motion, you know, to signal the tsunami. And, you know, I basically couldn't do anything at that time. But later on, you know, he ended up burying his wife on his property. And, you know, I went to visit the property later, another house that we were building for him. And that was when I was able to kind of console him and, you know, find some words of comfort. But again, he was happy to have a home, and he decided to move on with his daughter.
Well, I think that's a big part of a recovery effort. In any event, in whatever devastation is left to any area, is that people need some kind of closure. I mean, I think that might have been part of the reason why, when we heard that interview with Mayor Ray Nagin and the interviewer himself, Garland Robinette, breaking down in tears. I mean, I can't remember too many times where I've ever seen that happen. And it's because these people have been going through this for days now and have no sense of what kind of closure is going to be brought in. And I guess that might be something that maybe you, as a person who's been in a relief effort a lot, could address, is that do you ever feel that part of you being there is not so much about fixing things, but really just about being?
I think once we got there and the people in the village saw that we were working, that in itself was a big relief.
Right, right.
And that's something that's not happening down in New Orleans right now, where, right. You know, and I think the mayor of New Orleans said so himself, like, you know, he sees all these TV cameras, things like that, and, you know, doesn't see anybody else around there that is really helping out. And I think, you know, he's, you know, extremely exasperated by the whole thing. And it's tragic because you won't get that sense of closure unless you actually see people out down there to help.
And I think, you know, we're talking with Alap Shah, who recently returned from Sri Lanka, where he was helping to rebuild homes after the tsunami. If you want to find out more about the organization that he was helping volunteer with, they're called the Sri Lanka Care Foundation. You can go online to SriLankaCare.org. Definitely some very, very amazing stories, Alap. And you talk about, I think, the hope that can be given to people just when they see that there is progress, even if there's still a long way to go. That's what we're not seeing in New Orleans right now. But, you know, talk about one situation you had with a man whose house you rebuilt, who, even though he didn't have much, the change that was made in his life from the work that you guys were doing there.
What this particular man was doing is his house was very far off and within the village. And the village we were working on was an actual swampland. So when tsunami came, that area was... was covered by 6 feet of water for 2 days. So all the houses that were there, essentially they were wooden shacks, were completely waterlogged and destroyed. So this particular man was a little way, little off the beaten path, and he had some other organizations come by, and they saw that, you know, his house was way too far, and he asked me to come by to investigate his house. So I went knee deep full of water, and went to his home, and recognized that, you know, we should build a home for him. And at the end, right before I left Sri Lanka, we completed his home, and he was so, even his, you know, very meager means, he was so appreciative that he actually gave me a ring, and it's something that, you know, he was struggling to feed his family and whatnot, and, you know, I tried not to accept it, but he said it was an insult not to, and it was an amazing thing that he had such a gesture.
It's definitely an amazing story, and I think, you know, one of the things that also relates your experience a lot in Sri Lanka to what's happening now on the Gulf Coast is that the tsunami took place at the end of December 2004. Alap, you arrived there in May 2005, is that correct?
Yes.
And there was still so much work to be done, and still is, correct me if I'm wrong, so much work to be done there. And I think that it's important that we just don't forget. As Mayor Ray Nagin said, keep talking about it. I mean, it was 5 months after the tsunami. By May 2005, most people were planning their summer vacations here in America, and yet, you know, Alap and many, many others who are working over there in Asia were just beginning to rebuild homes, and I hope that we don't forget that. But Alap, we want to thank you very much for coming.
Yeah, Alap, and thanks for sharing the story with people, because I think a lot of people still don't realize what goes into a recovery effort and how long it goes on, and that there are people still trying to recover in the South Asia region, and we want to make sure that we can duplicate that kind of outpouring of support and recovery down in the Gulf region right now.
That's right. The website, one more time, SriLankaCare.org. It's the Sri Lanka Care Foundation. And, you know, there are some people out there, conservatives especially, who say we shouldn't be talking about certain issues surrounding this catastrophe right now. But I say no, and Brendan says no, we need to talk about these things now because we don't want people to forget.
Right. The fact that this went on till May for Alap to go down there and be there means that you can't forget. You have to talk about it right now, and you have to keep talking about it.
We want to talk about the decisions that led to making this disaster so much worse, because there were decisions that made it worse. And we want to talk about it while those images are still fresh on your TV screen, where you can see firsthand the human toll, the effect of decisions that have been made that have led to the point that we're at right now. Thank you, Alap Shah. We'll be back with on some of these decisions and update you on the news. It is 45 past the hour, Morning Sedition, Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition, delivering you from evil in 3 hours or less. Air America Radio.
It is 50 minutes past the hour. You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. I'm Dan Pashman. I'm here with Brendan McDonald.
Morning.
We're filling in for Mark Maron and Mark Riley. They'll be back on Tuesday. In just a few minutes, we're going to replay the single most amazing, most emotional, and most intense piece of audio that has come out of this hurricane catastrophe, and that is an interview with New Orleans Mayor Ray Nagin from our sister station, WWL, in New Orleans, that first aired yesterday evening. And we got a lot of response to it. We played it earlier. We're going to play it again. It's in its entirety in just a few minutes. But, you know, there are a lot of conservatives, Brendan, that want to say that now is not the time to point fingers. Now is not the time to ask why the relief effort is so slow and why there was no plan. Now is just the time to pull together. And obviously we want to pull together. We want to help the people. But I say that now is the best time to talk about these things and to ask these questions, okay? Because right now there are images on your TV screen. And those images, there's a direct link between those images and Washington, D.C. And it's very difficult sometimes for us and for normal people to understand the link between decisions that are made in Washington, policy decisions and budgeting decisions. As you know, it's hard to understand that they affect real lives and real people. And it's hard to think of the amounts of money that you hear thrown around. It just sounds ridiculous. When you hear that we're spending $5.6 billion a month in Iraq, it's like that's monopoly money. That's not real, but it is real. It is real money, and the decisions affect real people. And now many of those real people are dead because of those decisions. All right. Now, George W. Bush inherited a $5.6 trillion surplus. It's now a $7.9 trillion debt. That's $13.5 trillion that are gone. And I know it's hard to hear that number and comprehend that it's real, but it is real. And there is not an infinite supply, and that money, that $13.5 trillion, is gone. It's been given away in the form of a trillion-dollar tax cut for the richest 2%, while money was cut from New Orleans flood control. Money was given to Halliburton in Iraq, who charged us twice for meals for troops that they don't even serve once, and charged us again for meals they do serve after picking out the shrapnel. And that's true. They did that. All right. And again, that was a choice by people in Washington, D.C., a choice that affects real people and real lives. That was not a natural part of this natural disaster. That was a choice made by people in the Bush administration, and real people are dead as a result of it.
I'm going to read some quotes here because I have a laundry list of experts who said, we all saw this coming.
Yeah.
And on top of that, we all said what has to be done to prevent it from being as disastrous as it was. This guy, Eric Tolbert, he was in the Bush administration. Up until February, he was FEMA's disaster response chief. All right? Disaster response chief for the Federal Emergency Management Agency. And he told of this plan that was put into place down in the New Orleans area. There was a program that would have designed a plan to fix unresolved problems in the evacuating of sick and injured people from the Superdome and housing tens of thousands of stranded citizens. See, this actually wound up happening. We wound up putting refugees in the Superdome and then have had no way to evacuate them. People are still there. So this plan was set up years ago to try to fix that. Government cut the funding. Think about that. The next time you think about the $186 million per day that go into Iraq from this country. Stat I saw the other day said $727 out of your pocket have already gone to Iraq.
Every single American, $727 per person to Iraq.
Eric Tolbert said that that plan being canceled, quote, it would have made the response faster. You might say it would have saved lives.
There is a direct link between decisions made by the Bush administration and what you see on your TV screens.
Look, James Lee Witt, who was the former FEMA head, the head of FEMA, and he received bipartisan support when he was the head of FEMA, had in 1990 planned for a New Orleans nightmare scenario, much like the one we are seeing right now. And in the plans, the federal government figured it would pre-deploy nearby ships with pumps to remove water from the below sea level city and have hospital ships nearby. None of that happened this time. And Lee Witt, James Lee Witt said, these things need to be planned and prepared for. It just doesn't look like it was. Here's a quote from one Army colonel who's there right now. He said, it looks like FEMA has never been to a hurricane before. And one National Guardsman stationed at the Superdome said, this is mass chaos. To tell you the truth, I'd rather be in Iraq. You got your constant danger, but at least I have something to protect myself. Three meals a day, communications, a plan. Here, they had no plan.
When a soldier who has served in Iraq comes back to the U.S. and says he wishes he was back in Iraq because in Iraq they had a plan. And as we know, there wasn't and still ain't hardly any plan for Iraq. But when he says that that was better, that's a pretty sad and pretty strong statement.
Now, FEMA is responding to this by saying that up till this time, the past 3 days, FEMA has made the priority getting people off roofs and keeping people from drowning. That's right, and that's good. And we take our hats off to the brave rescue workers who are facing the dangers of this rescue effort head on. But the fact that those men and women are doing their jobs well doesn't excuse poor planning on every other aspect of this relief effort.
And it doesn't excuse conscious decisions to take money away from that relief
effort.
Right,
and you know, Dan, the relief effort in Louisiana hasn't been helped by the fact that three of the state's top officials in emergency management were indicted due to misuse of Hurricane Ivan's funds, which obviously tied the state office up in red tape rather than making disaster planning a priority. Government failed you, America. It failed you on the state level, it failed you on the federal level, and I'm not just talking to the people of the Gulf Coast. I'm talking to everyone. Everyone is going to bear the burden of this. In whatever you're paying for services that are going to go up, in the money that we are going to send down there to the American Red Cross and other relief agencies, America is bearing the burden of this, and it's because your government failed.
And it did not have to be this way. This is a natural disaster that was unnaturally catastrophic. It did not have to be this way. And also, while you see these horrible images on your TV screen of bodies floating, of rats eating corpses in the streets of an American city in the year 2005, I want you to know that this didn't have to be this way. And I also want you to know that yesterday, Condi Rice went shoe shopping.
Yeah, we'll get into a little bit more of that as well. And we'll also get into a little more of what Denny Hastert had to say that really offended us about this, and other people who are blaming the victims of this tragedy. But we're also, most importantly, going to listen again to New Orleans Mayor Ray Nagin, who appeared on WWL Radio with Garland Robinette in the most amazing interview that we've heard today, 57 past the hour.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Six past the hour. This is Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. I'm Dan Pashman. I'm here with Brendan McDonald. Chris Lopresto is here. Mark Maron and Mark Riley will return on Tuesday. We do want to let you know we're doing a live broadcast next Friday from the New School's Tishman Auditorium. It's on 12th Street, just east of 6th Avenue. We're going to have The Daily Show's Stephen Colbert. We're going to have New School President and former Senator Bob Kerry. And we're also looking into doing something there to help raise money for what's going on down in the Gulf Coast. And we are going to replay that very riveting interview with New Orleans Mayor Ray Nagin shortly. And meanwhile, while you look on your TV screens and while you listen to this program and others, and while you think about what's going on down there, I want you to know that yesterday, at the same time that people were dying, our Secretary of State, Condoleezza Rice, went shoe shopping.
Yeah, where'd she go, Dan? What was the place?
Ferragamo, it's called. And,
yeah.
I guess it's one of the fanciest ones in New York, and she spent several thousand dollars on new shoes. And when a woman confronted her and said, "How can you do this while people are dying?" That woman was escorted away. The night before her shoe shopping adventure, Condi was seeing the Broadway musical, the Monty Python musical, Spamalot. So clearly Condi's not concerned.
You know, I have a hard time with vacations on the executive level of government in the first place.
Yeah.
I am of an opinion that if you are elected to office or appointed by the president, then you're in for the long haul for 4 years. You are doing the most important jobs in the country. No vacation for you is really appropriate.
Definitely not at a time like this.
Right, that's the thing. That's an argument to be had, and I'm sure that somebody could present to me a good argument with why people need to take vacation, and obviously
right.
I take vacation, and I know that it helps recharge my batteries. I'm sure someone would present a good argument to me as to why it's good that our leaders in the executive level take vacation. But to do it just in disregard of what's going on in America right now, I mean, I said before, Dan, these people are one of two things. They are clueless, or they are just complete disrespectful a-holes. And neither of those are good options.
I would actually disagree, Brendan. I don't think that they're one or the other. I think that they're both. I think that there's it's a combination here. You're seeing a combination of incompetence and carelessness. They didn't plan. They didn't care about planning. They wouldn't know how to plan. I mean, they didn't plan for Iraq, which they've been talking about for 10 years. So they didn't plan for that. So how can you expect them to plan for this? They're not good at running the country. They're great at playing the game of politics.
Right, winning the election.
They're great at winning. But they're very, very bad at running the country.
That's because they don't want to, really. When you think of all the special interests that you have to look into and what you have to do and amass to run a country successfully, there's really a very small percentage of that they actually want to be taken care of.
Right. But it isn't just that they don't know how to do it any better. It's also that they don't care.
Right. And I know it seems a little callous, maybe, to some people, for us to be harping on this point right now, but I don't think so, because I think that this speaks to something that is systematic in that mindset. I'm sorry, systemic in that mindset, the mindset of the neocon.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everything for yourself, everyone else can go scratch. And that's really coming to a head here in the last couple of days with this disaster relief, or should I say this disastrous relief, because it's not happening. We're still watching the TV. We're still seeing people stranded and screaming. And we have this interview with Ray Nagin crying, the mayor of New Orleans crying for help, literally, saying, where are you? Where is the federal government? And the problem that I'm seeing now is that instead of finding an answer for this, people are finding excuses. And one of those excuses is blame the victims. FEMA Director Michael Brown said that the agency, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, is trying to, quote, help those who are stranded, who chose not to evacuate, who chose not to leave the city.
How dare you? How dare you?
A city with one-third of the people living below the poverty rate.
100,000 people in New Orleans make less than $8,000 a year.
Right.
How dare you?
You think they could buy a car? You think they could buy a bus ticket?
A bus ticket? And to where?
Right.
To where? So that they can sleep outside somewhere else?
Right.
These people can barely afford to eat. Many of the people in New Orleans, it is one of the most poverty-stricken major cities in America. And for this conservative spin, and they're playing politics, so don't give me that, don't make this political, because they're making this political. For them to suggest that these people who are starving and drowning to death right now and still and will continue to do so, that they chose to be there, cuts right to the heart of who these people are.
And it's so typical that even if you buy their argument that there were people that were told to leave and told to evacuate and they said, no, we're going to ride this out, it's a hurricane, we've been through it before, we'll stay behind. The fact that the conservative logic is then, well, screw those people.
Right.
And they're having no problem saying that. We have a report right here from this paper. I love the name of this paper. The Waterbury, Connecticut Republican American newspaper. And in their editorial that says, is New Orleans worth reclaiming, they say that the people living in New Orleans and other low-lying areas insist on living in harm's way. They ought to accept responsibility for what happens to them and their property. They ought to accept responsibility for what happens to them and their property. So basically, these people, even if they chose to stay behind, which many of them didn't, these people are saying, don't help them. It's their responsibility.
It really is, Brendan, and it cuts right to the heart of who these people are. The kinds of people, now, if you call yourself a conservative, if you think that you're proud to be a conservative, look in the mirror and listen to some of the things that conservatives are saying now about the victims of this hurricane and ask yourself, are these the people that you want to ally yourself with? Are these the people you want to stand alongside? The same people who would smear the mother of a slain soldier because they don't like what she's saying? That's who these people are. And notice, Brendan, that they never, ever debate you on the issue itself. There is overwhelming evidence that shows that this administration made the conscious choice to take money away from disaster preparedness to fight in Iraq. But are they arguing that point? Do they defend their decisions? Do they try to explain why it was the right thing to do? No, of course not. Instead, they attack the victims. They tell us that these poor people dying in the streets are to blame for their own destitution. It's their fault because they didn't leave, even though they had no way to leave and nowhere to go. Only a conservative would create the conditions that lead to a disaster like this and then blame the victims for their destitution.
Right.
It's very similar, as we said earlier, to veterans, people who are sent off to war by conservatives in their misguided wars.
Or at least heavily supported wars by conservatives.
Right.
Conservatives who are not serving over there, but are more than happy to send them over there.
They send people off, they come back, and they're not the same when they come back from war. They can't hold down a job. They don't have the proper mental care, and they end up 20 years after returning on the streets as homeless people. 25% of the homeless men in America are veterans. And then conservatives point the finger at those veterans that they sent off to war, and they point their finger at those veterans on the street and say, get a job, buddy.
Yeah, how come you can't pull yourself up?
Right, you're not working hard enough. Well, it's the exact same mentality here. These people were pushed farther in, the people of New Orleans and the Gulf Coast were pushed farther into poverty by conservative policies. The preparedness that should have been and would have been in place, the funding was taken away. Because of Iraq. The National Guard's men and women and equipment that we desperately need right now, it's in Iraq. So this disaster was exacerbated by conservatives and conservative policies, and they would now have the gall to point the finger at their own victims and say this is your fault.
Well, we're going to listen to the New Orleans mayor, Ray Nagin, again. The interview aired on WWL Radio in New Orleans. That was last night that that interview aired, and we're going to play that again. And Mayor Ray Nagin points the finger as well. And he calls some people on the carpet for what they have not done up to this point and what they did to get us to where we are right now today, where we're on the fifth day and we see nothing getting better. We're going to play that for you again coming up. And we're also going to talk a little bit about a certain elected leader who thinks that we should cut and run. Just cut and run. They tell you we're not going to do that in Iraq, but they want to do it in New Orleans. It's 16 past the hour. I'm Brendan. This is Dan, and we're on Morning Sedition.
You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
You know, God is looking down on all this, and if they are not doing everything in their power to save people, they are going to pay the price, because every day that we delay, people are dying.
That's New Orleans Mayor Ray Nagin in a very, very powerful interview, which we will replay in its entirety in our next segment. This is Morning Sedition on Air America Radio, 20 minutes past the hour. I'm Dan Pashman. I'm here with Brendan McDonald. Mark and Mark will be back next week. And right now, Brendan, we have a special guest on the phone.
Yeah, we were going to talk a little bit about Denny Hastert and what he had to say yesterday, but it's more important right now that we go to the phone because we have a call-in from Reverend Jesse Jackson, who is in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Reverend Jackson, are you there?
Good morning. I am here today, and thank you for allowing me to communicate with the people. We're looking at compounded disasters. I mean, the first disaster was Hurricane Katrina, which was anticipated, and that was not adequate preparation for it. The poorest people could not get out of town. 100,000 people in New Orleans make less than $8,000 a year. They don't have transportation.
Mm-hmm.
They were trapped. Then the resources to strengthen the levees were diverted away either through tax cuts for the wealthy or to Iraq. And the helicopters the National Guard needed here in New Orleans were in Iraq. And so that was a part of that disaster, frankly. And now the evacuation process. This is the most humiliating part, to see so many thousands of people 5 days later without water, without food, without communication. We are looking at a disastrous thing. In Indonesia, in 2 days after the tsunami struck, we were dropping water and food, but not to New Orleans 5 days later.
Reverend Jackson, are you getting any word as to why in the world that's the case? I mean, and you're in Baton Rouge right now. The situation must be crushing there as well. We got a report that Baton Rouge is now the biggest populated city in Louisiana because of all the refugees.
The reason why I'm in Baton Rouge is because it's a staging ground. We're going back and forth between New Orleans and it's drier and higher here
in
Baton Rouge than it is in New Orleans. We got back at 4 o'clock this morning. This is either indifference toward the people, basically black, or incompetent, or all of the above. I mean, President Bush has assigned, again, his father and President Clinton to be the kind of the overseers. Why not have some black people on that commission? Congressman Bennett Thompson from Mississippi, who's on the ground, and Senator Vivian Stiggins from Alabama, and Senator Cleo Fields from Louisiana. This is not just a kind of ordinary, casual, political thing. It is a gross emergency, and our government has not served our people well.
Reverend Jackson, we're talking to Reverend Jesse Jackson, who is live right now in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. And Reverend Jackson, one thing that we've heard from various corners, even from the head of the Federal Emergency Management Agency, is a tendency among especially some from the right wing to blame people for not having left, to blame them, to say that they chose to stay there. What do you say to those people?
Well, some people, those in the hospital did not choose to stay.
Mm.
Those who didn't have transportation didn't choose to stay. I mean, 100,000 people who make less than $8,000 a year who don't have transportation didn't choose to stay. That is a kind of crippling indifference that is so unkind. And that's why I guess some of these big churches with Christian life centers that will not open up for evacuees. That same kind of indifference manifests itself in that the most immoral way. My painful experience last night was with Center Fields. We took 7 buses to get 450 students from Xavier, who'd been there holed up since last Monday. And we finally got to the students at 2 o'clock in the morning, very dark, no lights on in New Orleans at all that time of night because all the electricity is down. But other people thought we were coming for them, formed a human chain around the bus, didn't want to let us go because they thought the bus had come from them. It hurt so bad to leave those people there because we had no more room in the bus for them. Mm. Why couldn't our government have had 500 buses here and take these people to unused military bases, for example? We're closing military bases that have facilities and dormitories and cafeterias and hospitals. There's been no creativity, no sense of urgency to save these people's lives. And my fear is that when all this is over, thousands will be found dead.
You just said there's been no creativity shown, and we heard Mayor Ray Nagin say the same thing. He said these people are thinking very small. And the mayor also said that when this is over, every time they delay, more and more people are going to die, and somebody will pay for that. Do you think that there will be some kind of payment for this from the inaction or the misaction of the government?
I don't know how that will play out. All I know is that we're looking live on TV, people dying. I saw babies dying on the bridge. They've been there for 4 and 5 days without milk or formula or food or water. It's 95 degrees down here in this swamp land because it's below sea level. And now mosquitoes are biting. Now you have this explosion, the gas explosion, which will further contaminate the water. It is a human disaster, and yet President Bush is going to fly over today as if that has real meaning. It has more meaning for him looking like a leader than it does for the people.
Definitely a photo op.
Reverend Jackson, one more before we let you go. You know, while you are there watching the horrible devastation going on the Gulf Coast, we've received word that Condoleezza Rice, our Secretary of State, has been here in New York City. She saw the Broadway musical Spamalot and yesterday spent several $1,000s purchasing shoes at one of the very high-end shoe stores here in New York. What do you think of that?
Not much, but it is a suggestion of the insensitivity of our times. And while the media focuses so much on some desperate people taking some food and some water and some clothes out of stores that are already closed down because of the flood, the real looting is in Atlanta. They're selling gas for $6 a gallon.
Right, and this is on a holiday weekend when people are going to be traveling. They know that they can use this fear to raise the gas prices. Well,
the exaggerated price of gas is the real looting.
Right,
and the cause of death is not looting; it's the breaking of the levees. The levees broke because we did not invest in them. The coalition is.
Right. Well, Reverend Jackson. Reverend Jackson, we thank you for calling in today, and thank you for being down there in Louisiana and helping out, and we'll continue to get reports from what's going on there. Thank you for being on the program, Reverend Jesse Jackson. And we'll play Mayor Ray Nagin's interview with WWL Radio after this. It's Morning Sedition, 27 past the hour.
Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
This is Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. I'm Dan Pashman. Brendan McDonald is here.
Good morning.
We've got a few more minutes before we turn over the reins back to Mark and Mark. Next Tuesday, it is 35 minutes past the hour. We are continuing to monitor the situation on the Gulf Coast. And we want to go right now to some absolutely riveting audio. It really is the most emotional, most intense thing that we have heard come out of this tragedy yet. It is New Orleans Mayor Ray Nagin. He's speaking with Garland Robinette, an interview conducted last evening on WWL, our sister station in New Orleans. We're going to play that interview now in its entirety. Can we hear that, please, Chris?
They told him we had an incredible crisis here, and that his flying over in Air Force One does not do it justice. And that I have been all around this city, and I am very frustrated because we are not able to marshal resources, and we're outmanned in just about every respect. You know the reason why the looters got out of control? Because we had most of our resources saving people, thousands of people. That was stuck in attics, man, old ladies. When you pull off the doggone ventilator vent and you look down there and they're standing in there in water up to their freaking neck. And they don't have a clue what's going on down there. They flew down here one time, 2 days after the doggone event was over, with TV cameras, AP reporters, all kind of goddamn, excuse my French, everybody in America. But I am pissed.
Did you say to the President of the United States, I need the military in here?
I said I need everything. Now, I will tell you this, and I give the President some credit on this. He sent one John Wayne dude down here that can get some stuff done, and his name is General Honore. And he came off the doggone chopper, and he started cussing, and people started moving. And he's getting some stuff done. They ought to give that guy, they don't want to give it to me, give him full authority to get the job done, and we can save some people.
What do you need right now to get control of this situation?
I need reinforcements. I need troops, man. I need 500 buses, man. We're talking about, you know, one of the briefings we had, they were talking about getting, you know, public school bus drivers to come down here and bus people out here. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. This is a national disaster. Get every doggone Greyhound bus line in the country and get their asses moving to New Orleans. That's they thinking small, man, and this is a major, major, major deal. And I can't emphasize it enough, man. This is crazy. I've got 15 to 20,000 people over at the convention center. It's bursting at the seams. The poor people in Plaquemines Parish, they're air vacuuming people over here in New Orleans. We don't have anything, and we're sharing with our brothers in Plaquemines Parish. It's awful down here, man.
Do you believe that the president is seeing this, holding news conference on it, but can't do anything until Kathleen Blanco requests him to do it? And do you know whether or not she has made that request?
I have no idea what they're doing, but I will tell you this. You know, God is looking down on all this, and if they are not doing everything in their power to save people, they are going to pay the price. Because every day that we delay, people are dying. And they're dying by the hundreds, I'm willing to bet you. We're getting reports and calls that is breaking my heart from people saying, I've been in my attic. I can't take it anymore. The water is up to my neck. I don't think I can hold out. And that's happening as we speak. And you know what really upsets me, Garland? We told everybody the importance of the 17th Street Canal issue. We said, please, please take care of this. We don't care what you do. Figure it out.
Who'd you say that to?
Everybody. The governor. You know, Homeland Security, FEMA, you name it, we said it. And, you know, they allowed that pumping station next to it, Pumping Station 6, to go underwater. Our sewage and water board people, Marcia St. Martin, stayed there and endangered their lives. And what happened when that pumping station went down, the water started flowing again in the city. And it started getting to levels that probably killed more people. In addition to that, we had water flowing through the pipes in this city. That's a power station over there. So there's no water flowing anywhere on the east bank of Orleans Parish. So a critical water supply was destroyed because of lack of action.
Why couldn't they drop the 3,000-pound sandbags or the containers that they were talking about earlier? Was it an engineering feat that just couldn't be done?
They said it was some pulleys that they had to manufacture, but, you know, in a state of emergency, man, you are creative. You figure out ways to get stuff done. Then they told me that they went overnight and they built 17 concrete structures, and they had the pulleys on them, and they were going to drop them. I flew over that thing yesterday, and it's in the same shape that it was after the storm hit. there is nothing happening. And they're feeding the public a line of bull, and it's spinning, and people are dying down here.
This is Morning's Edition, and we're continuing to listen to New Orleans Mayor Ray Nagin in an interview with WWL Radio.
That the federal government can't do anything without local or state request. Would you request martial law?
I've already called for martial law in the city of New Orleans. We did that a few days ago.
Did the governor do that too?
I don't know. I don't think so. But we called for martial law when we realized that the looting was getting out of control, and we redirected all of our police officers back to patrolling the streets. They were dead tired from saving people, but they worked all night because we thought this thing was going to blow wide open last night. And so we redirected all of our resources, and we held it under check. I'm not sure if we can do that another night with the current resources. And I am telling you right now, they're showing all these reports of people looting and doing all that weird stuff, and they are doing that. But people are desperate, and they're trying to find food and water, the majority of them. Now, you got some knuckleheads out there, and they are taking advantage of this lawless situation where, you know, we can't really control it. And they are doing some awful, awful things. But that's a small majority of the people. Most people are looking to try and survive. And you've got one of the things people have, nobody's talked about this. Drugs flowed in and out of New Orleans and the surrounding metropolitan area so freely it was scary to me. And that's why we were having an escalation in murders. People don't want to talk about this, but I'm going to talk about it. You had drug addicts that are now walking around this city looking for a fix. And that's the reason why they were breaking in hospitals and drug stores. They're looking for something to take the edge off of their Jones, if you will. And right now, they don't have anything to take the edge off. And they probably found guns. So what you're seeing is drug-starving, crazy addicts, drug addicts, that are wreaking havoc. And we don't have the manpower to adequately deal with. We can only target certain sections of the city and form a perimeter around them and hope to God that we're not overrun.
Well, you and I must be in the minority because apparently there's a section of our citizenry out there that thinks because of a law that says the federal government can't come in unless requested by the proper people. That everything that's going on to this point has been done as good as it can possibly be.
Really?
I know you don't feel that way.
Well, did the tsunami victims request, go through a formal process to request? Did the Iraqi people request that we go in there? Did they ask us to go in there? What is more important? This is, you know, and I'll tell you, man, I'm probably going to get in a whole bunch of trouble. I'm probably going to get in so much trouble it ain't even funny. They probably won't even want to deal with me after this interview is over.
Well, you and I'll be in the funny place together.
But we authorized $8 billion to go to Iraq. Lickety-quick. After 9/11. We gave the president unprecedented powers, lickety-quick, to take care of New York and other places. Now, you mean to tell me that a place where most of your oil is coming through, a place that is so unique, when you mention New Orleans anywhere around the world, everybody's eyes light up. You mean to tell me that a place where you probably have thousands of people that have died, and thousands more that are dying every day, that we can't figure out a way to authorize the resources that we need? Come on, man. You know, I'm not one of those drug addicts. I am thinking very clearly. And I don't know whose problem it is. I don't know whether it's the governor's problem. I don't know whether it's the president's problem. But somebody needs to get their ass on a plane and sit down, the two of them, and figure this out right now.
What can we do here?
Keep talking about it.
Okay. We'll do that. What else can we do?
Organize people to write letters, make calls to their congressmen, to the president, to the governor. Flood their doggone offices with requests to do something. This is ridiculous.
I don't want to
see anybody do any more goddamn press conferences. Put a moratorium on press conferences. Don't do another press conference until the resources are in this city. And then come down to this city and stand with us when there are military trucks and troops that we can't even count. Don't tell me 40,000 people are coming here. They're not here. It's too doggone late. Now get off your asses and let's do something. And let's fix the biggest goddamn crisis in the history of this country.
And I'll say it right now. You're the only politician that's called and called for arms like this. And if whatever it takes, the governor, president, whatever law precedent it takes, whatever it takes, I bet that the people listening to you are on your side.
Well, I hope so, Garland. I'm at the point now where it don't matter. People are dying. They don't have homes. They don't have jobs. The city of New Orleans will never be the same. And it's time.
We were both pretty speechless here.
Yeah, I don't know what to say.
I gotta go.
Okay.
Keep in touch. Keep in touch.
That was New Orleans Mayor Ray Nagin in an interview with WWL Radio and their host Garland Robinette. That aired last night on WWL, and we got that feed. We aired that feed in its entirety and with all the interference that we received on that line because we just felt it was important that you hear the whole thing, and we didn't want to cut any of it away, including that long silence at the end. It was when Mayor Nagin said, New Orleans will never be the same, and both he and the interviewer, Garland Robinette, breaking down in tears. A very sad situation specifically stemming from Monday, where after this hurricane hit, we all thought that New Orleans had a chance, that New Orleans might bounce back, and that we would get people in there and we would get help and things would happen. And this country, like it's faced adversity so many times in the past, would bounce back. And the tears that you heard from Ray Nagin and Garland Robinette are probably pretty indicative of the fact that that's probably not going to happen now. They're thinking too small, is what Ray Nagin said about the relief effort, and that they're going to pay the price. It's 48 minutes past the hour. This is Morning's Edition. I'm Brendan. I'm here with Dan Pashman, and we'll be right back.
Morning's Edition, on the air and online. Morning'sEdition.com, Air America Radio.
Morning's Edition on Air America Radio. I'm Dan Pashman. I'm here with Brendan McDonald.
That's right.
Mark and Mark return Tuesday. And as we wrap things up, Brendan, there are a couple of quick points that I want to make that I would like to ask people to keep with them and remember as we head into this weekend. As I do have the sinking feeling that there's going to be more bad news before we start hearing good news.
Right, and it is a long weekend that people take vacations and take off, so it's easy to try to forget about things. It's true. We should remember several things going into this weekend, and we cannot stop thinking about them or talking about them.
That's right, Brendan. The first thing is that you're going to hear a lot of talk about the looting and the crime that may be going on in New Orleans. Now, we've heard in today's show from New Orleans Mayor Ray Nagin and from the Reverend Jesse Jackson, who are both down there, and have said, yes, there are a few, select few, very small number of knuckleheads, to use a mayor's word, who are doing things they shouldn't be doing. But the vast majority of people down there are desperate, and they're trying to stay alive. When you see people breaking down doors to get into stores, many of them are trying to get water and food. And you need to keep that in mind as the media focuses on the quote-unquote looting. All right, that's the first thing. And also know that many of these officials who are holding press conferences want the media to focus on the looting because it's an excuse. It's an excuse to explain why they were unable to coordinate a proper relief effort. The second thing I would like to ask people to keep in mind is you see these horrible images on your screen and as you read more about what's gone on in this horrible failure of our government, is to keep in mind that it didn't have to be this way. That there were conscious and intentional decisions made by our government to divert funds away from preparedness for these things into the Iraq War, into tax cuts, that warnings over many years and decades were ignored, and that it did not have to be this way. This was a natural disaster with unnatural consequences, Brendan.
And what else didn't have to be this way is this: the last 4 days.
Right.
We've seen that they eliminated the ability to have a plan in place to evacuate people. That plan was supposed to happen, and the funding for it was cut. So these 4 days could have been a lot different if a plan like that was placed, and the lives could have been saved. And we also just need to remember that with the lack of a proper plan, as we're hearing from all these experts saying that the plan is just improper, that the burden is going to fall on a lot of us, a lot of Americans. And knowing who we are as people, we are up to that challenge. We might not be able to do everything that needs to be done to save cities like New Orleans and people in towns like rural Mississippi right now, but we can help. And you can make donations to the American Red Cross ASAP at 1-800-HELP-NOW. It's been a tough week, Dan. I mean, we were looking forward to coming in here and holding the fort down for Mark and Mark, and we wanted to keep the Morning Sedition vibe going. And
right.
We're kind of doing that for a couple of days, but today it just became impossible.
I
send my apologies to our listeners who, you know, rely on us for Rapture Watch and the War on Brains and Planet Bush and all the fun that we have on this show. But today was not the day for that.
It's true. You know, we started off talking about this on Monday, and we were hoping to have better news and be able to talk about a relief effort. And we started off, at the beginning of the show, we said it. I'll say it again at the end. We started off on Monday feeling grief and sympathy for the victims. And now it's Friday, and now we're just feeling anger.
Yeah.
Because this didn't have to be this way.
And guys, on behalf of all of our listeners, I just want to thank you both for being here live and not running a best of, and being here to really add or at least be here for all of us listening.
Well, thanks, Kay. You were here too, by the way.
Yeah, we want to thank Crystal Presto. He was here
you
too.
Did actually help run the show, so right. I think you should probably remember that. I also want to thank our intern, Anthony, who is, you may know on the air, as one of our Goliaths. And as I see him standing over there by the door, by our microphone by the door.
Anthony, you're blocking out all the light.
The window that we usually look through. Anthony, it's your last day. Thank you so much for the past couple of months. You've done some great work for us. We appreciate it.
No, thank you, guys. It's been an awesome time.
And where are you headed?
Thank you, Brendan. Thank you, Dan. I'm heading back to Chicago, Northwestern University.
Northwestern, yes. Right. That's Chicago, the former territory of one Dan.
I love Chicago,
right?
Northwestern University, the alma mater of my brother and my fiance.
What are you looking to do, Anthony? You got any plans?
I don't know. After this summer, I think this is kind of what I want to do.
That's great. Yeah. We like to hear it. We like to hear
it. It's a lot of fun.
You mean hang out with me and Brendan no matter where we go?
Yes. Exactly, yeah.
Well, man, you've been a noble dream.
You've been a big help to us. You're an on-the-ball kid, a model intern, and
thank you.
And also a giant. So you've scared us many a time. And never fear, dear listeners, because Mark and Mark will be back on Tuesday. We got a great week coming up. We have our live broadcast at the New School on Friday.
Yeah, Stephen
and on
Colbert.
Monday, we're going to be playing some clips from some of our best on-the-road shows.
Yeah.
So you want to tune into that and then tune into Mark and Mark, The Return, on Tuesday.
That's right. Great job, Brendan, Chris, everyone. This is Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.